from KQED.
You're listening to Queued Up, Storytelling with Heart. I'm John Sepulveda. If you've been listening to American Suburb, you know that we wrapped up last week. You can download all the chapters and get caught up. But this week, we're bringing you a very different story called Soundtrack of Silence. Here's April Domboski with the story.
Matt Hay was in his early 20s when doctors told him he was going to lose his hearing. He began to prepare. He started taking sign language classes and learning how to read lips. He also doubled down on music.
So when you think about getting a song stuck in your head, that usually just happens till you hear the next song, and then that one gets stuck in your head. I found myself in a moment where I thought, what songs do I want stuck in my head for the rest of my life?
He wanted to capture the memories attached to those songs. Going out with his buddies, driving fast down the freeway, falling in love for the first time.
You very quickly want to start hearing things like listen to those songs that really meant a lot to you, because you might not ever get to hear them again.
We all have a soundtrack to our lives, but what if you were 21, just coming of age, and you had to choose then what the soundtrack would be for the rest of your life?
The searchlights on the skyline.
What if your life went on, but the music in your head stayed the same?
Who's gonna love my baby when she's gone around the bend? Egyptian bells are ringing.
In retrospect, Matt says his hearing was always kind of bad. He grew up in the 80s when people never gave much thought to protecting their ears.
I grew up around lawnmowers and chainsaws, and we cut firewood and trimmed trees and mowed lawns.
He remembers cheating on those audio tests they did in elementary school.
I never raised my hand enough in the whole, like, tone test. I can even remember sometimes raising my hand because I felt like it had been too long since I heard a tone. So I was just making it up.
When it came time to think about college, he applied to West Point. He had to go through the requisite physical at Fort Knox. Ear analysis, hearing test.
And I failed. I got a letter from the government that I had failed because of substandard auditory acuity.
He shrugged it off and went to Indiana University instead. But during his sophomore year, he noticed when he talked on the phone, he was always holding the receiver to his right ear. He figured, okay, I better go see the audiologist.
And she said, you know, your results are just coming back really weird. I'd like you to have an MRI. I'm like, nobody goes into an audiogram and comes out with a diagnosis of getting an MRI.
The scan showed two tumors in his head, pushing up against his left and right hearing nerves. Doctors diagnosed him with a rare condition called neurofibromatosis type 2.
It affects 1 in 40,000 people, and like, we had never heard of it, because why would anybody have heard of it?
The tumors are benign, and they were small, so Matt took a wait-and-see approach. Within a year, he was basically deaf in his left ear, but his right ear was fine, so he figured he was fine.
I'm still active, healthy college student doing absolutely everything I want to do. I just have trouble hearing, like, no big deal.
Junior year, midterms. The doctor said it was time for brain surgery. Matt's left hearing nerve was already permanently damaged, so they weren't going to touch that. They wanted to remove the tumor on the right side. But the surgery didn't work. Doctors couldn't get the tumor out without damaging that hearing nerve too. So instead, they removed a piece of Matt's skull just to give the tumor more room to grow. Matt's reaction to all this gives you a sense of the kind of guy he was and still is.
I was back a week later out with a friend for my 21st birthday. So it was like, hey, you know, big deal. Even if I have to have brain surgery, I'm still immortal Matt.
He graduated college and moved to Chicago. He rented an apartment with three of his buddies, and he got his first job doing sales for a market research firm.
Then in Chicago, my hearing started getting worse and worse.
Matt was 22. His right ear, his good ear, was starting to falter. The tumors were getting bigger.
Everything grew really fast. I mean, it went from non-issue to major issue.
Matt went back to the doctor, and he told Matt what he didn't want to hear. It could be a few years, it could be 10, but eventually he would be deaf. This doctor, he had a funny way of putting things in perspective.
Said, you know what, you're probably going to lose your hearing. It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, it's not that big of a deal.
Which is a bold statement for somebody that's not going to lose their hearing.
What the doctor meant was, this disease is serious. It's not just tumors that cause hearing loss. These tumors can grow anywhere. Matt could become paralyzed, go blind.
His point was, there's a lot that can go wrong with NF, and hearing loss is relatively minor.
And that forced Matt to face reality. He realized he needed to prepare. He signed up for a sign language course. He started learning to read lips. And he started paying attention to music like he never had before.
When you have a neurosurgeon say, hey, you're going to lose your hearing, but that's not that big of a deal, you very quickly want to start hearing things like listen to those songs that really meant a lot to you because you might not ever get to hear them again.
He chose a handful of songs that he listened to on repeat over and over.
I found myself in a moment where I thought, what songs do I want stuck in my head for the rest of my life?
He was basically curating the soundtrack to his future. For Matt, that started with the Beatles, the Beach Boys, and Prince.
It was one of those, like, I really need to start cramming for Prince.
When his hearing went, he wanted to be able to recall the songs in his head, but also the memories he associated with those songs. This one takes him back to high school, when he and his good friend Stephanie first got their driver's licenses.
And I have great memories of going down, driving down the highway in her Subaru Legacy with all four windows down on a, you know, summer evening, and just Seven turned up all the way and all of us singing horribly along with it.
Matt was really deliberate about choosing songs he associated with good times. He was not sitting down and memorizing angsty teenage rock anthems or depressing ballads.
I
love the
colorful clothes you wear. I never connected with melancholy. That was just not how I've been programmed. If there was a song I associated with sadness or loneliness, it's not something I would have latched onto. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. And I still was at a point where I was a little bit invincible. Yeah, I've had one brain surgery, but I bounced back from that in no time. Maybe I'll be the one to avoid all of this. So when I think about good vibrations, I just think about the three buddies in an apartment. You know, we're all working and getting a real paycheck for the first time in our lives, and we've got our own place, and we're going out in the city, and we come back from a night out, and just let's play some Beach Boys. I don't know where, but she sent me there. And a time I can remember thinking, like, but I don't think people appreciate just how great this song is. So that became one that I thought, I really need to, like, capture that song.
Around the same time all this was happening, Matt met a girl, Nora. They had both known of each other in college, but it wasn't until 6 months after graduation that the spark came. It was at a New Year's Eve party in Chicago.
And so this was 2000. So they play Prince's 1999, and then it's midnight, and they played the Backstreet Boys Millennium song. At some point in the night, got in this really great conversation with Nora, and was just really struck by her. She's incredibly intelligent.
He was funny.
Remember her just being this very joyful person.
He was kind.
And she was also very cute.
And he was cute. Wow.
And so at midnight, I positioned myself to kiss Nora at midnight.
For Matt, this kiss wasn't just the start of a new year. It was the beginning of a new era. He got Nora's phone number, and the next week, he called her. Nora was in med school in Indianapolis at the time, and a couple weekends later, Matt was on his way for a visit. He left work on Friday evening, then stayed until 4 a.m. on Monday. It was awesome.
So we started doing that once a month. Then it became every other week. Then it became every week.
Indianapolis is about a three-hour drive from Chicago. The song Matt studied on these trips was a 15-minute opus by Phish. Divided sky, the wind blows high. Divided sky, the wind blows high.
At first, I wrote off Phish because they can go on these long jam bandy things, which are not always hearing friendly. But Divided Sky just had, even if I wasn't picking up every little intricacy of the music, it had these really cool waves of crescendos of building up to a moment and then kind of slowly backing away and then building up to a moment. And sometimes I would just listen to that song 10 times, and it never got old.
Come summer, Nora moved to a town just outside Chicago so she could be closer to Matt. Nora knew from the beginning that Matt had a disease that affected his hearing, but it wasn't an issue.
He had a good side, so I would always walk on that side, talk on that side, and it became habit, so that was no big deal, really.
But when she started going with Matt to his doctor's appointments, he told her she should be taking those sign language classes too. She started to realize how much more there was to this disease. She and Matt doubled down on music together. They went to concerts and festivals.
You two?
Paul McCartney.
Phish.
Camping at Phish shows.
Beck.
But the memories Matt wanted to capture the most were the intimate ones at home.
You know, I can remember Nora taking a radio in to the bathroom and smell her perfume and overhear the music she's listening to as she's getting ready to go out. The searchlights on the skyline,
just looking for Rayfair. Beautiful Way was always the song. Who's gonna love my baby when she's
gone around the bend? You know, I go out and peek in, and she's singing to herself and just having more fun getting ready, listening to music than she had going out.
If there was any song that was Matt and Nora's song, it was this one.
Just really resonated with us.
Matt remembers this time Nora helped him and his friends move into a new apartment. They spent the day in sweatpants and t-shirts, laughing, joking around. Nora made moving fun.
And I remember listening to Beck and being in our new apartment with boxes everywhere and dancing to Beck. And it was the first time I told her, I think I'm falling in love with you. I think when you have the right moment in your life and the right person and the right situation, that the song that's there when that happens can become really powerful for ways that you didn't expect or maybe you can't describe.
Matt thought if his world went silent and he conjured the melody from Beautiful Way in his head, he could also conjure the feelings of falling in love.
When I would think, oh, I'm losing my hearing, I would think, Nora, I want to make sure that I remember what these sound like.
Fall, Matt and Nora had been dating 9 months when they faced their first test with Matt's disease. Matt was 23, and his hearing was still gradually getting worse, but slowly. The problem was with a new tumor that showed up.
And he had a spinal tumor in his neck that became awful to the point where he couldn't really move, sleep, do much at all.
He was going to need major surgery to remove it. Matt felt guilty. He loved Nora, but he didn't want to burden her, and he didn't want her to resent him.
Yeah, I was like, hey, I get it. Like, you don't owe me anything. I'm going to be in rehab. I don't know what life is going to be like for me. I totally get it. if this is more than you wanted to sign up for.
Nora, she was in. She dropped out of med school. She says her priority shifted after falling for a guy with a disease that reminded her of how short life was. When the big day came, Matt remembers Nora driving him to the hospital.
You know, we listened to this on the way to surgery. Like,
don't worry about a thing. You
know, don't worry about a thing. It's a good theme when you're waiting. Brain surgery.
It's one of those songs from Matt's Positive Vibes repertoire.
This is the song that we did to do something other than cry.
But the surgery wasn't all right. The doctors removed the tumor from the top of his spine, but there was a complication.
He woke up from that surgery and couldn't walk, and he had sensory loss from the waist down.
Doctors sent him to rehab, but it was unclear if he would ever walk again.
And the doctor casually said, well, wherever we are in a year, that's where we'll be. And that's all anybody really knew.
Matt was by far the youngest person in the rehab. And the schedule was not designed for 23-year-olds. Lunch was at 11, dinner was at 4:30, lights out at 6. So Nora would come break him out of there.
And she'd take me to the mall and push me around in a wheelchair. And we got in trouble for staying out too late, which was like 5:30. 23-year-old rehab rebels.
Matt saw what he had. A girl willing to give up med school to sneak him sandwiches, to snuggle in his twin bed watching old movies. A girl who, after visiting hours, trained for a marathon to raise money for research into neurofibromatosis 2.
You can't not marry. You can't not marry the girl that does that.
Two years after surgery, Matt and Nora got married and bought a condo in Chicago. Life was normal and happy. Physically, Matt was fully recovered, back to his invincible self. But his hearing continued to get worse. The hearing aid in his right ear, his good ear, kept getting bigger until it was as big as it could get. Matt could no longer hear soft sounds, like the door opening when Nora came home from work, or her heels on the kitchen floor.
Our system was, when she would walk in the door, to flip the lights on and off, because otherwise I'd be doing something, and all of a sudden she'd be there and would scare me.
Talking on the phone was a big problem. Matt couldn't follow conversations, so it would only work if he asked the questions, simple questions.
For me to be able to call and say, did you need me to go to the grocery on the way home? She'll say one for yes, two for no. She'll say either say yes or no, no.
Though Matt's hearing had been declining gradually since high school, there was a day when it finally went. He was 27.
It was August 18th of 2004, and Matt had come home for lunch that day. We had lunch on our rooftop, and I remember him walking away, and I yelled to him, and he didn't turn, which then, with one ear, he could have, should have. And he went back to work.
I can remember being in the elevator in my office at work, and was going down the elevator, and somebody was making small talk. And for no reason at all, it sounded like they were underwater when they talked to me.
He called me and he said, things are sounding weird today. It's tinny, it's muffly, like something's not right.
So I hopped on the train and I went home. And Nora, as soon as Nora got home from work, I said, I think we're done.
We were told this is how it could go.
And there's a place on Division Street, Adobo Grill, that has great margaritas and great guacamole, the tableside guacamole. So we went and got guacamole. Like, what do you do when you lose your hearing? You go get margaritas and guacamole. And I can remember walking there and just sitting across having margaritas and telling each other I love you.
He wanted me to laugh. He wanted me to laugh so he would remember that. And hear me say I love you.
You can mouth the words I love you to somebody. You can sign I love you to somebody. But I wanted to make sure. I wanted to make sure I remember what it sounded like.
A lot of people think being deaf is like living in absolute silence, but it's actually really noisy. Matt had major tinnitus. When he could hear, any sound coming in would mask the ringing in his ears. But when his hearing went, the ringing was unbearable.
I would have one ear that sounded like a roaring freight train, and the other ear would sound like a cryptic organ in its constant sound coming in at different pitches and what feels like different volume. They don't exactly know what causes it, but it's almost like phantom limb pain, where your brain wants to hear something, and when it can't, it manufactures its own noise.
But in terms of the outside world, he got nothing. Even fire alarms, nothing. This became dangerous in more ways than one.
I would leave doors open, leave cars running, burn pizzas in the oven.
I remember the first couple of days, I would forget. I would see something, or I'd go to tell him something, or I'd say, Matt. And then I'd be like, he doesn't hear me. Like, it doesn't matter how loud I yell anymore. Matt. I remember sitting there in my condo, looking right at him, screaming, and just being reminded, like, wow, this has changed.
Communication became a big problem. Matt's lip reading skills were minimal. He and Nora had taken those sign language classes, but they only ever made it to the beginner level.
When the time came when we needed it, that's not how we communicated. It was more finger spelling or even charades.
I mean, think about it. We're not just talking about, did you feed the dog? Will you get the mail? This was a rough time. They're in their mid-20s just building a marriage, and now their world was turned upside down. And the only way they could talk about it was to spell out every word they wanted to say.
It was super frustrating, super frustrating. And at a time when I needed him, I mean, we had to learn to communicate, but we had to learn how to fight too.
They couldn't yell anymore.
And it's hard to, when you're mad, to slow down and enunciate and keep eye contact, because sometimes you want to just throw something and walk out of the room, but you can't.
As if all this wasn't enough, 10 days after Matt's hearing went for good, Nora's dad died, totally unexpectedly. He drowned in an accident.
It was just not even real. I've got this husband who I now can't communicate with. I have suddenly lost my dad, and it's just, it's almost like I couldn't even, you know? It was so much at once.
The only thing Nora could focus on was what next.
I just turned into like an admin person, because that's all I could do at that time, is just figure out what we were going to do.
Nora's main task at this time was talking to doctors in Los Angeles. That's where Matt was going to have his next brain surgery. They were finally going to remove the tumor on his hearing nerve. But there was an experimental part of the surgery, too. Doctors were going to implant a new hearing device right at the bottom of Matt's brain. It's called an auditory brainstem implant, or ABI. The couple was taking a risk here.
One of the things that really scared me most through this process was I like to research. I'm in marketing research. I research things as a career. And so when I went to research the ABI or I want to talk to people about the experience, there was nobody to talk to.
This is not a cochlear implant. About 100,000 people worldwide have one of those. At the time of Matt's surgery, only 200 people had an ABI device.
And the one person I finally get in touch with was just miserable. They were really unhappy with their ABI. They were really unhappy with their experience.
At best, these devices restore the most basic level of hearing. And there was only a 50-50 chance that it would work at all.
Even if it does work, you should expect what they would describe as hearing life noises, buzzers, alarms. And at that point, when you can't hear anything, that even sounds great.
So these things are unusual. They have a spotty success rate, and it requires major invasive brain surgery to put them in place. Matt and Nora figured they should go to the place with the most experience putting them in, like maybe the place that invented them. That would be the House Ear Institute in LA, where Dr. Bill House implanted the first auditory brainstem implant in 1979. All the doctors Matt saw in Indiana had been trained here.
When you're trying to get a sense back, you don't want to go to the convenient hospital that has done one or read about one.
To understand how an auditory brainstem implant works, it's helpful to review some fifth grade science on how our hearing works in general.
It is indeed rightly called the most remarkable mechanical system in the human body.
Sound waves enter your ear canal and vibrate the eardrum.
The membrane as drumsticks beat upon a kettle drum or tympanum.
That shakes the middle ear bones, which push the sound to the spiral cochlea,
which has the shape of a snail or cockle shell.
The cochlea translates the sound vibrations into nerve impulses.
These impulses are conveyed to the brain by the auditory nerve.
So with Matt, there's nothing wrong with his ears. His eardrum, ear bones, cochlea, those all work fine. What doesn't work are his two hearing nerves that carry sound from the ears to the brain. So the little ABI device, it bypasses the ear and the hearing nerve completely and gets implanted right on the brainstem itself. So a month after Matt and Nora sat over margaritas, saying their final I love yous, Matt had the ABI device implanted in his brainstem. And a month after that, the doctors turned it on.
At first, it just sounded like water running, sounded like somebody smashing up newspaper or wrapping paper. Things were just very robotic.
Matt says at that point, hearing anything was crazy.
And the sound you're used to, you know, you can kind of tell. You can locate noise. You can kind of feel noise coming in your ears. This was totally different because the sound came from the inside out. It went directly to my brain. So it bypassed the, like, feeling of being able to hear.
Normal acoustic hearing relies on 60,000 nerve fibers. Matt was down to 21 man-made electrodes. He had to learn how to hear all over again, almost like learning a new language. And at first, all the sound coming through the ABI device was just gibberish. Everything sounded the same.
Clapping or a dog bark or an oven timer going off. Everything just had the same kind of wow. Wrong. 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 Charlie Brown's teacher is probably the best analogy I can make. There was no clarity to anything.
Every couple months for the next year, Matt came back to LA so the audiologist could essentially tune the ABI. He would adjust each of the 21 electrodes until those sounds gradually came into focus. The guy to do that was Matt's audiologist at the Housier Institute in L.A.
I'm Steve Otto.
He's kind of like a piano tuner.
And I've been doing that for 30 years.
Making all the electrodes on the ABI device work together in harmony.
So I test each one of the 21 electrodes, and I'll ask the person, oh, what's it sound like? Is it low pitch? Is it high pitch?
So if anybody's gotten fitted for glasses and you go in and they put the big discs in front of your eyes and they say, which is better, this or this? And the A goes from really blurry to being really crisp.
Once Matt was able to distinguish basic sounds, the oven timer from the dog barking, it was time to try a word test.
Smile.
And they hear the recording say a word.
Gum.
And their job is to repeat the word.
School.
This is really hard for new ABI patients to get right.
Think.
They say, you know, when you say mom, what I hear doesn't go with what I see on your lips.
Meet.
For those first several months after surgery, Matt was communicating one word at a time. And yet somehow, to Nora and Matt, it seemed like the perfect time to talk about whether or not they should have kids. They were 28, and none of their friends had kids. But for Matt and Nora, time was on fast forward. After two brain surgeries, the answer to big life questions always seemed to be, why wait?
We had just lived a lot of life quickly, and it forces you to sort of speed up some life decisions.
But there was a much bigger question here. Neurofibromatosis 2 is genetic. Matt had a 50-50 chance of passing it on to his kids.
And so that was a tough time where we started thinking like, you know, what's our long-term plan? You know, are we going to have kids? Do we cross our fingers and hope for the best? Do we adopt?
Even beyond that, Matt worried. He'd just lost his hearing. His balance was bad, and he might end up with serious mobility challenges down the road.
Then I start wondering, you know, can I be a dad? Am I even going to be happy? Or can I do all of the things that I want to do as a parent? Would I ever hear the sound and hear my kids talk?
This was a very motivating question for Matt. He doubled down with the ABI training. Even though the sound was unpleasant and didn't make sense, he pushed through. He went back to LA for a 6-month tune-up, and now Matt was ready to try full sentences. Matt's audiologist, Steve Otto, puts a new cassette in his player, and a woman transplanted from the 80s comes onto the TV screen.
Please get the groceries out of the car and put them away for me.
She's wearing a pink turtleneck, and her hair is feathered out.
Make sure you call your brother this week.
No, so it's a sentence test, and the object is for them to repeat as much of the sentence as they can.
So Matt might only hear a couple words.
Take the dress like.
He can lip read a few more.
Take the dress and buy that you like.
When he combines hearing and lip reading together, Matt can understand about 90% of what's being said.
Take the dress back and buy something that you like.
Otto says Matt is way above average.
He's a real motivated guy. He's employed, so his hearing is very important for him. It's part of his money-making machine.
4 months after surgery, Matt is back at work full-time. His boss found him a new market research job that he could do online. And a few months after that, Nora is pregnant with twins. Otto says this is one of the main predictors for how well people progress with the ABI. Matt wanted to hear his kids' first words.
Just like anything else, practice, practice, practice.
Matt was starting to be able to hear some more nuanced things.
The sound of my wife's heels on hardwood floors when she would come walking in. So I can hear the door open because that was a soft sound. But I would know she would be home because of the click, click, click of the heels.
There was one time he was coming back from the grocery store, walking up the stairs to their condo.
And I kept hearing this whoosh, 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 whoosh.
He stopped and looked around. He examined the heating vents.
When you only have one ear, you can't identify where sound comes from. So I hear this whooshing sound, but I have no idea if that's from above, below, right next to me.
He put the groceries down and retraced his steps down the stairs.
And so it wasn't until I had walked back down and back up that I realized it was the sound of the seam on the inside of my jeans rubbing against each other. And it had been maybe 20 years since I had heard something like as soft and subtle as the sound of your own pants rubbing against each other when you walk.
It was an amazing moment for Matt, and it made him wonder what other sounds he could reclaim. When he originally set out to memorize his favorite songs, he thought he'd never hear again. Now, with the device, maybe he could combine his memory with the digitized sound waves to hear something that sounded like music. He had to start simple.
Things like Bon Jovi's Living on a Prayer, stuff like that was out. There was just way too much going on in the music.
He'd only had the ABI for a year so far. So instead, he went for songs with really clear rhythms and minimal lyrics.
Particularly earlier Beatles, that was just clean and like an easy melody. And you know, some of their songs only have 10 words. Yeah. Love, love me do.
You know I love you. It's sort of like primary colors, if you will, as opposed to a complicated palette of pastels and shadows.
And a lot of repetition and a lot of the same words over and over again.
And so it wasn't really about the words at all. It was about the rhythm the words created.
You know, I wasn't really hearing the music. I was identifying the music. So I could say, hey, is this Let It Be? Because I got the like, bum, bum, bum. When I find myself in that maybe I'm not getting the like unique moments within the music, but I need to manage my expectations. Let it be.
For now, this was enough. It was just his first year learning to hear again with the ABI device. Already, he was ahead of the pack. And now, he and Nora had two little babies, a boy and a girl, Luke and Madeline. Recognizing some Beatles songs was more than enough.
There was a moment when Luke and Maddie were babies. We had two rockers in the nursery, so we'd like sit side by side and read and play the Beatles lullabies.
A couple years later, they'd welcome another daughter, Kate. All three were tested for NF2. None of them has the disease. So here's Invincible Matt, healthy children, loving wife, stable job. His life was starting to look normal. But he wasn't happy for a number of reasons. When doctors removed the tumor in his head, they severed his left facial nerve, leaving the left half of his face paralyzed permanently. Nora remembers this was the thing that really shook Matt's relentless optimism.
And he was miserable because he said, I have to be able to smile. I don't want to not be able to smile.
Now that... That's what can take away the feeling of invincibility.
Being a dad in the midst of all this was hard. If communicating with Nora was a challenge, understanding toddler speak was impossible. In the night, he couldn't hear the kids at all. So when Nora had to travel for work, her mom came to stay.
Yeah, I was self-conscious about being the deaf dad or being the deaf guy.
He had had 8 surgeries. He was supposed to be satisfied with surviving, but he wasn't.
I just was at a point where I felt like I'd had a lot of losses and I needed a win.
Matt wanted to do something the other dads couldn't.
In tonight's special report, the odds were stacked against him after being diagnosed with a rare disease.
He decided to train for an Ironman. That's a 2.5-mile swim, followed by a 112-mile bike ride, finished off with a full marathon, a 26-mile run.
But Matt Hay refuses to let his disabilities define him. And to prove it, this man will compete in one of the most difficult and prestigious races on the planet, the Ironman Triathlon.
I didn't want to be the dad that couldn't hear. I wanted to be, oh, hey, you're like, didn't you do an Ironman? I wanted to have a label that maybe would offset hearing.
Training for an Ironman is no joke. Matt spent every free minute in the pool or on his bike. And that put a lot of pressure on Nora to be essentially a single parent to 3 little kids.
I regret that aspect of it. But I didn't know if there was going to be, am I 1 surgery away from not being able to walk, much less run, bike, swim, you know, 140 miles.
Nora was also withdrawing, but for her own reasons. While Matt was busy trying to prove his invincibility, his absence just reminded Nora of his mortality. She couldn't forget that another tumor could always be lurking.
I think I was pushing him away because part of me was just like, you're going to leave me?
With Matt gone so much, those thoughts started to haunt her.
It was hard to even leave the house with three little babies and just physically get everybody buckled, get everybody, like, going to Target with all three by myself was a feat. And I think that's when I sort of panicked about it, because I was just like, don't you dare leave or get sick, because I can't do without you.
She had something to prove too, that she could be a single parent if she had to.
Like, it may be me with them one day, and I need to know that it can be me with them one day, that I can do it on my own without your help.
When Matt finished the Ironman, he realized how much he and Nora had grown apart, and that scared him. He ran, swam, and biked away from his fears, and now he figured he could jump back to life the way it was before. But Nora had adapted to life without him. He realized he had a lot of work to do to get her back.
I think it took losing my hearing to become a better listener. And it's made me, in some ways, a better communicator.
The Ironman had given Matt an excuse to stop listening. But now he had to get back to work with his ABI. He'd made a lot of progress in the first couple years, but he still had a long way to go before he could even understand full sentences. Learning to communicate on a practical level that he could understand, and an emotional one that Nora would understand. This was Matt's next Ironman. And the key to his self-prescribed training regimen was music. Just like with language, Matt continued to study his old song list and to test himself. It became a task to measure his progress. If Beatles was like bench pressing 100 pounds, Fish was like putting 200 pounds on the bar just to see how it felt. Watching music videos where he could see the singer's lips was almost cheating. For a real challenge, Matt listens to music in that all-American way, in the most American of places, driving in his car. Music that came out after 2001 is out of the question. It's meaningless to him. So it's three old CDs, Beatles, Beck, and a mixed album that Nora made when they were dating, called Songs We Like. Matt just plays them on repeat, the same albums, the same songs, for the last 10 years.
Nora and I aren't listening to music together because she doesn't want to listen to the same, 40 songs over and over again. And I totally get that.
Crazy. Her left eye is lazy. She looks so Israeli. Nicotine and gravy.
Just knowing that same part over and over again is enough for me to take me back to 864 North Polina or 651 West Brightwood. We had a green couch.
All this time I've been getting to know Matt, I've wondered, what's it like when you grow up, when you go through all these life changes, but the songs in your head stay the same?
It just feels like a very heavy choice to make. And so I sort of see it as you're choosing the soundtrack for the rest of your life.
Yeah. I don't think that's like an overly dramatic way to put it, because I didn't know if I would ever hear again. And so what song do you want stuck in your head from age 25 to 85? And I don't know at 25 if I was like wise enough to think of it that way.
People well-versed in the music of the last decade will try to tell Matt it's not such a bad thing having your inner soundtrack stalled in 2001.
And people, when I tell them that, will joke like, oh, you're not missing anything. I'm like, all right, I'll trade you then.
Here's the interesting thing about Matt's soundtrack being stuck in the past. It's what ultimately delivered him back to his present-day life. Listening to songs that reminded him of the early romantic days with Nora also served as a reminder of what he had to lose.
If somebody had said in 20 years, you're going to be able to hear a song that will connect you back to intimate moments that you had with Nora, or just was so far beyond the realm of possible.
But that's what was happening. as he trained the cognitive parts of his brain to hear these old songs again, the emotional networks of his brain got fired up. And the more in touch Matt became with the positive feelings of the past, the better his communication got, the better things went with Nora. They started talking again, really talking. Nora says they're in a much better place now.
I mean, you grow. Marriage goes like this for anyone. That was a growing phase, a learning phase that we got through.
They adapted to the changes in their life together, found their roles as parents together. They even sang together to their kids before bedtime.
And so I would sing and probably butchered the lyrics, but that's the beauty of singing to a two-year-old. I can remember, Kate, sing the U2 song, sing the U2 song.
Luke and Maddie are both 11 now. Kate is 8.
When you would go to bed, do you remember what song you asked me to sing?
That song, I remember that one.
You would say, sing the U2 song? You say...
Oh, yeah, that one.
Diamonds in a ring of gold. A story to remain untold. But all the promises we made.
For Matt, as an adult and as a parent, the role of music has shifted. It's no longer just a solitary activity, a training tool, or a link to the past. It's simply the bridge to his family. Today, there are all these little ways that Matt shows his love through music. When Kate wanted to learn guitar, Matt bought one the next day. When he drives Luke to basketball games, he plays rock anthems in the car to get him pumped up. And last year, when they moved into a new house, Matt installed a surround sound system for Nora. Sometimes, before they go out, he'll turn up the music, peer into the bathroom, and watch Nora sing to herself while she gets ready.
Such a beautiful way to break my heart. Ooh, such a beautiful way, my heart. Someone calling your name.
The soundtrack of Silence was reported and produced by April Domboski. The editor was Julia McAvoy. Rob Spate, Devin Katayama, and Paul Ann Kaur helped with audio engineering. Queued Up is a production of KQED in San Francisco.